Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
You're listening to The Exchange. Here's today's show.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Exchange. Here's what's ahead to kick things off on this Monday. It's V-Day in America. The Pfizer vaccine begins rolling out at hospitals across the country. We speak with Walgreens about when and how the broader public will start getting it. Plus, investors embracing the vaccine news, pushing the Dow above its record close earlier today. We're struggling to hang on to that positive territory right now. And the stimulus talks are back. We have the skinny on what's in the bill and whether to bet on its passage. And crude's incredible comeback and gold's glitter fades. We'll ask Goldman Sachs' Jeff Curry what he thinks of these moves. But let's begin with these market moves this afternoon. And Seema Modi has the latest for us. Seema?
Kelly, a historic day for the market. We are watching the national rollout of the vaccine. The Dow did hit a record high earlier in today's trade. But then stocks started to pair gains after New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio made those comments about a potential lockdown coming here to New York City. And you're looking at the Dow basically flat on the day, or up about 33 points. The Nasdaq is the outperformer here. You can see up almost 1%. But sticking with the Dow, McDonald's contributing about 30 points to the Dow after UBS upgraded the stock. Analysts there are bullish on the company's breakfast offering and its investment in digital. Shares are up about 2.4%. Other names like Amgen and Visa also trading in positive territory. However, two IPOs from last week, two hot IPOs, Airbnb and DoorDash, selling off in today's trade. Airbnb getting hit by a double downgrade from Gordon Haskett. Analysts there saying its valuation is too lofty, especially if you compare it to other travel names like Booking Holdings and Expedia. Shares are down about 8%, and DoorDash lower by 13%, but both stocks still trading above where their IPOs priced. Kelly, back to you.
I'm watching those two, Seema. Appreciate it very much, our Seema Modi. It is a historic day, as Seema said, as our massive COVID-19 vaccination campaign gets underway in this country, with the first shot given in New York this morning and similar pictures to these coming in from across the country. Meg Terrell has been following the rollout for us, and she spoke with Pfizer's CEO this morning about it and about the next steps from here. She joins me now with the very latest. Hi, Meg.
Hey, Kelly. Well, we just got an update from Operation Warp Speed on how all of this is going across the country. General Gustav Perna, who is leading the distribution oversight of all of these logistics, saying it's gone incredibly well with Pfizer so far. Over the weekend, of course, those first boxes of vaccines were packed up and started to get shipped out from Pfizer's plant in Kalamazoo, Michigan. We understand now from General Perna that as of 11:30, about 55 locations have received those packages that have been shipped out from Kalamazoo. They are now preparing, packaging, checking the ones that are going to go out on subsequent days. In total today, 145 locations are expected to get deliveries of the vaccine. General Perna saying they should arrive in every location by 2 p.m. local time. Tomorrow, we're expecting 425 locations to get their vaccines, 66 on Wednesday, an additional 581 from Thursday and beyond, for a total of 2.9 million doses from Pfizer and BioNTech going out this week. Now, General Perna was asked on this briefing, what could go wrong with all of the deliveries here? And he was very candid. He noted there could be address mix-ups, that their technology is delicate and needs to be formatted perfectly. He said on the end of the spectrum, scary things like transportation accidents could happen. And he noted, of course, the weather that's happening right now, these incoming storms across the country. And Kelly, as you mentioned, we talked with Pfizer CEO this morning about one of the major topics being supply. And could they increase more than 1.3 billion doses that they have planned for next year? And here's what he told us about that.
We are trying to see if we can teach other people and if they can, we can help them order equipment. All of that, there's no stone that we're leaving unturned right now. And this is the basis of what I said before. We have promised to the world 1.3 billion doses, but we are hoping, but we are trying hard to make much more than that. And that based on increasing our own and also finding partners to do it. But right now, we are not aware of anyone who can do it. And we looked a lot.
And Kelly, Pfizer is the first on the market here in the U.S., but it is not expected to be alone for long. If Moderna gets granted emergency use authorization later this week, which is possible, it's expected 6 million doses of Moderna's shot will go out next week in the U.S. to 3,285 locations. Kelly, we are off to the races.
Meg, I was just wondering, why was the first vaccine given in New York if it was being shipped from Michigan? Why? That's a long ways for it to travel.
It's a really good question. We didn't get a whole lot of details about the plan for rolling out this vaccine, or if there would be sort of a Grandma Margaret or a William Shakespeare. Remember the first two people in the UK who got their shots. We didn't know when New York was administering that first shot that that was probably the first one happening in the United States. So not a whole lot of clarity about why the one in New York was, you know, before in the Midwest or anywhere else.
Yeah, just curious. And it was so poignant, William Shakespeare getting his vaccine the other day in the UK. Meg, thanks so much. We'll check back in soon. Our Meg Terrell with the latest for us. And this first wave, Pfizer is shipping nearly 3 million doses of the COVID vaccine across the country, including to Walgreens locations. The vaccine is the fastest ever to be developed, and Walgreens has been moving just as quickly to prepare for this historic day. Joining us now is Rena Shah, Walgreens Group Vice President of Pharmacy Operations and Services. Rena, it's great to have you here. What happens at Walgreens today?
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity. We have been similar to how it's been for the last couple of months. We have been actively preparing for this moment for when vaccine is available. So we have all of our teams ready to go so that when vaccine does come to our locations, we can go ahead and activate our plans to support not only the healthcare workers this week, but really activating the long-term care facilities plan next week as we move forward.
But so just to be clear, when I think of Walgreens, I think of the general public, and it's my understanding that we aren't going to have access to this for months. Are you guys playing a role in the rollout to frontline workers?
So what we're doing right now, and you said it really well, in the fact that vaccine is limited as we speak right now. So the states and the federal government are working hand in hand to ensure that the allocated vaccine that is available, it goes to those recommended eligible individuals, healthcare workers, first line workers. So what we've done is over the last couple of months, and even as we speak right now, we're working with states, working with healthcare institutions to offer our support to help immunize those healthcare workers. But shortly thereafter, starting next week, we will be activating the long-term care facility plan, which has been in partnership with OWS, Operation Warp Speed, as well as the CDC, so that we can immunize the residents at the long-term care facilities, as well as the staff.
Okay, so that was going to answer my next question, which is, especially for a vaccine like this that has to be kept at super cold temperatures and has to be used within a few days once it's thawed, so to speak, why would you guys get some if you're not going to be giving it out for a couple of months? But you're saying Walgreens is going to play a role in vaccinating people at nursing homes and that kind of thing?
You're 100% right. So what we've done is we've identified locations across the country so that we can have ultra cold freezers as well as dry ice capabilities so we can store the vaccine. And what we'll be able to do is take that vaccine and go to these long-term care facilities, skilled nursing facilities, as well as assisted living facilities to help immunize those patients that we know are at highest risk. Our pharmacists, we have pharmacists across the country. We've been immunizing patients for over a decade, and we have a lot of experience of being able to take vaccine to go onto these facilities and help immunize those patients that need it the most.
At what point, what date, what time frame do you expect that people will be walking into Walgreens locations from the general public to be receiving this vaccine?
That's a great question. It's a hot topic across the board. As we spoke about earlier, and I guess even as the Pfizer CEO mentioned, we're continuing to build up vaccine inventory between Pfizer and Moderna and other manufacturers. As more and more vaccine becomes available, access to that vaccine will continue to grow. And so over the next couple of months, we anticipate that we'll be able to have our store similar to the flu season, that hopefully in the spring timeframe that we'd be able to have individuals come into our stores and get that vaccine when it's available to the general public.
Right. Yeah, I got my flu shot at the Walgreens in town this year. So basically the best you can tell at this point is the springtime for everybody else.
That's right, that ultimately our first priority based on ACIP recommendations, and the federal government and the states have done a really great job of, with the limited vaccine that is available, let's make sure we immunize those that are most at risk. And then as vaccine continues to build up an inventory, then we would continue to expand the groups. And so it is going to be a week by week process where we'll be monitoring and then making sure that as vaccine builds up, we'll continue to help support and help expand and access through our locations when the timing is right.
Yeah, makes sense. We'll wait and see what happens with Moderna next week and then the ones that follow, multiple ones, hopefully. Rena, really appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's Rena Shah of Walgreens. Let's turn now to Washington, where we did get progress, or at least movement, over the weekend in stimulus talks. The skinny bill is back, and the whole thing could now move forward in two pieces. But the clock is ticking. Let's get to Elon Moy with the latest this hour. Elon?
Well, Kelly, there is growing support for this proposal from both parties, with now the number two Democrat in the Senate, Dick Durbin, throwing his weight behind it as well. The bipartisan group of lawmakers who have been working on this are planning to release the full details at 4 p.m. today. And multiple sources tell me that they're going to be splitting up their $908 billion package. Now, the first piece would be worth roughly $748 billion and include the relatively non-controversial items, extending jobless benefits, $300 billion for small businesses, and money for the vaccine and for schools. The second bucket would be all of the hard stuff. $160 billion for state and local aid, the guardrails for distributing that money, and the language on liability reform. So the idea here is to let party leaders decide whether they'll be able to marry these two together or whether to keep them separate. And today, importantly, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, one of the biggest advocates for liability protections, said that it backs this approach as well. In a statement, the group said, if there is insufficient support for including liability protection and state aid, Congress must pass the remainder of the pandemic relief package developed by the bipartisan working group. Kelly, they said at this point, a partial agreement is better than no agreement. Back over to you.
Elon, this agreement would include the $300 boosted jobless benefits, correct? Not the possibility of a second stimulus check that had been floated by the White House in its plan last week. So if this moves forward, there will be no other direct checks coming, right? At least as of now.
That's right. If this moves forward as is, there would be no stimulus checks included. What I'm hearing from the group is that this was not part of their original framework, but they're not ruling this out. We will have to see what happens with Bernie Sanders and Senator Josh Hawley, who have both pledged to hold up any government funding if these checks do not get a vote in the Senate. Could we see potentially three different votes in the Senate, one on the first piece, one on the hard stuff, and then one on stimulus checks? Right now, it is all up in the air. But what we do find is that they're recognizing that this needs to be broken up into some bite-sized pieces and then allow the leadership, along with the White House, to figure out how to put those puzzle pieces together in the right way to get something across the floor and passed.
Yep, and get it done quickly at this point. Elon, thanks so much. Elon Moy in Washington for us today. Now, the market's been flirting with record high territory again today, but if you check out the chart, we can see we've just gone negative both on the Dow and the S&P. It's struggling to stay positive, but again, this is after we were trading above the record close. We're at 30,058 right now for the blue chips. And my next guest says that stocks are the most outlandishly priced versus commodities in all of U.S. history. And he's not the commodity strategist we have on later today. He's the equities guy. Joining me now is Bill Smead. He's Chief Investment Officer at Smead Capital Management. Bill, it's good to see you again. And so are you cautious on this market overall?
Yeah, we are. We would not be very interested in owning the S&P 500 index, which is now just going to be chock-a-block with very expensive and very popular items that will do better if we stay in quarantine. And obviously, we're nervous for our friends that are feasting in the growth stock world the last 2 or 3 years.
So that being the case, Bill, and we've talked about some of your preferences for the home builders and so forth. Quickly on that point, I think people should know as they debate whether or not this group can outperform next year, this is like a 10-year call for you, right?
Yeah, the best chart we have and the one that really helps you understand what's going on is not the absolute level of homes being built. You know, that gets reported every month, how many home sales there are. What you have to look at to know history is what part of that is per capita. In other words, in 1970s and 1980s, extremely high interest rates, the number of homes being built per capita were way higher than they are now. In fact, today's home building divided by population only puts us up to the worst recessions of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So, you know, the COVID got people going, right? It got the millennials interested in owning a home, but now there's 90 million millennials versus 65 million Gen Xers. It means 36% more people need a house. And last time I checked, myself and other people over 60 are way less interested in selling their house than they were before all the COVID hit.
A fair point. I want to move on and talk about what you referenced here about commodities. You think that stocks are outlandishly valued relative to commodities. So tell me why you think commodities are actually a generational kind of investing opportunity here. And if you would actually invest in them, I mean, the whole point of stocks is at least there's cash flow and different valuation models. You might even pocket a dividend. Not the case with commodities unless there's some of the stocks in particular that you like here. So how would you play it?
Well, it's a great question. I was an econ major, right? So it always kind of goes back to economics. So think about this. Scarcity creates value. So you look and you say, well, gosh, with all this ESG stuff and a new administration and all these companies trying to go green, it's like nobody's going to want the oil. No one's going to want to poke holes in the ground or let people poke holes in the ground. So whatever oil and proven reserves there are becomes dramatically more valuable. You can get $180 a share in proven reserves at Continental Resources, even though their market cap's $18 a share and their debt is $13. So you're paying $31 for $180 worth of oil, and that's a good trade. So what you have to understand is you just mentioned the stimulus. The number one thing that $4+ trillion of stimulus and the Fed doing their accommodative stuff is going to be, it's going to bump into 90 million millennials, and it's going to cause inflation. And when that inflation hits, people are going to look for investments that benefit from inflation, like real property that has renters, proven reserves, spreads at the banks. So this is going to be a different world of investing in the next 5 to 10 years. It always is. It always moves around. And that's where you want to go for the next cycle.
It's still a contrarian bet on inflation right now. You just look to the bond market. But it's one that you say with such conviction, Bill. So Chevron, also one of the names you like, Simon Property Group, among others. We appreciate you joining us. Bill, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Bill Smead of Smead Capital Management. There are a number of the likes in his portfolio right now. Coming up, 1.5 billion. That's how many Gmail users there are worldwide, and a large chunk of them lost access to their account today. Many of Google's other services also went down. We have the details, the response, and what happened. That's all next. Plus, crude's big comeback in gold's recent rut. Goldman's head of commodities, Jeff Currie, joins us with his outlook on the commodity space. That's coming up in just a moment. We're back right after this.
This is The Exchange on CNBC.
One in eight. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. Who'll serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had? Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves? Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can help you grow from here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to
McDonald's. One in eight start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
Welcome back. Google getting hit with a massive outage earlier today, which temporarily affected YouTube, Gmail, Nest, Google Classroom, Google Drive, and other services. The shares are still down about 1%. Deirdre Bosa is here with more of what we know so far. Deirdre?
Well, Kelly, all services, they're now restored, but that outage lasted about 40 minutes. Google says that it was an authentication system outage due to an internal storage quota issue. Put simply, it was an internal issue. This was not a cyber attack, and we're told that no security was compromised. But this outage and some other ones recently are a reminder that surging demand this year for digital services and our reliance on the cloud and its biggest players, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft, it has never been more important. A few weeks ago, Amazon's AWS experienced an outage that lasted hours. Again, this was an internal capacity issue, and it had ramifications for many companies' websites and operations. One school that uses Google Classroom had to tell virtual students to sit tight. They sort of missed out on the start of their day. Organizations that use services for voice calling over the internet, they had to use actual telephones. Access to email was cut off for many people as well. Google, of course, one of the most widely used email clients globally. Kelly, interruptions like this morning, they're not uncommon, but the key is that more work is moving online. So they are having much bigger impacts. Back to you.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Deirdre, because a friend of mine whose son is going to school, it's not like he's doing school from home, still had a bunch of things canceled today, at least initially, because they all relied on Google products. You know, everything from exams to a big group presentation that they were having. So, you know, I guess the issue, and Google says, you know, that this was, I forget the terminology it used for the outage, but it's interesting that one problem, and again, who knows how severe the problem, but could cause this widespread and pretty long lasting of an outage. It's surprising to me that with all the redundancies and all of the servers that you know that they have, they could still get taken down broadly like this.
Yeah, and I think the key is that more people are doing things not locally, that is not on their computers. That's why your friend's son had issue even going to school in person. So as more of that happens, as something goes down, sometimes it can have a bit of a domino effect in one region, at least. That's what we saw. We know more about that AWS outage. They did a much lengthier post-mortem. That's what we're hoping for from Google as well, Kelly, because I think there still are a lot of questions. How could so much go down at once? Aren't there supposed to be protocols? So, you know, we're looking for that, and we'll bring it to you as we get it.
Absolutely. Deirdre, thanks so much. Our Deirdre Boson has mentioned shares of parent company Alphabet near session lows right now. Gold's glitter fades. Crude is looking to continue its comeback, and copper is on a tear. We're going to speak with Goldman's head of commodities about all of that next. Plus, a 70% rally this year just isn't enough for one analyst. Why Cowen says another 30% move is higher ahead for Amazon. And don't forget, you can watch us live on the go using the CNBC app. The Exchange will be right back.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Welcome back to The Exchange. Oil is coming off its sixth straight week of gains now. It's up nearly 30% in that time and putting together its longest weekly winning streak since June. It's no surprise that energy stocks are up 17% over the past month as a result, trouncing the broader market's 3% rise. And my next guest says expect more of that to come as this is the beginning of a much larger bull market in both oil and commodities. For more, I'm joined by Jeffrey Curry. He's head of commodities research at Goldman Sachs. Jeff, it's good to have you back. So we just heard the case at the top of the hour from an equities guest about why commodities should do well because of scarcity and potentially inflation. What's your case as to why this sector is poised or will continue to take off?
Well, I like to point out, you know, this structural bull market in commodities is a train that's already left the station. You know, all the telltale signs of a structural bull market, you know, the dollar has broken a multi-year trend line of getting weaker. You have global FX curves rising. You have global trade rising. Metal prices at, you know, multi-year highs. Oil just crossed $50 a barrel. So I would argue, you know, we're in this structural bull market. And just quickly on the setup going into 2021, just illustrate how tight it is. Every single market, with the exception of wheat, is in a deficit, meaning demand exceeds supply. That rarely ever happens, only at the very end of a business cycle, not 6 months after it. And then there's three big structural issues that we're focused on. Structural underinvestment, you know, ESG plays into that. The second one is policy-driven demand. The green demand is likely to be as big as China was in the 2000s. And then this macro tail end of a weak dollar. You put those three together, it's a very bullish backdrop.
You know, it's kind of interesting, Jeff, just as a side note, that by de-investing in fossil fuels, they're going to become a lot more expensive. You know, that has its own problems for the world's poorest populations that really depend on them.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the politics of getting to peak oil are going to be extremely difficult between now and, say, 2030 or 2035. In fact, what we argue is that the investment in green infrastructure is going to stimulate more demand in the next 2 to 5 years before you actually have the negative impact on demand further out. And I think it's not just the activity itself, but it's the impact it's going to have on labor markets and the stimulus effect of all that investment in green infrastructure.
So let's talk about gold before we go. It's kind of in its own beast sometimes, wouldn't you say? I mean, there are times when it trades like commodities, there's times when it trades like equities, and then there's times when it trades kind of like a flight to safety. Are you still as positive on it as you were, I believe, the last time we spoke several months ago?
Oh, absolutely. I think at this point right now, because of all these positive things I was referring to in cyclical commodities, you know, that's your risk-on environment. And that's usually negative for gold. I think what you need to see is real physical evidence of inflationary pressures. You got to start seeing inflation priced into the bond market, and then gold has the potential to take the next leg up. I just want to make a quick comment about Bitcoin stealing demand for gold away, is that most of the demand for Bitcoin is isolated to the retail market. The institutional market struggles to be able to invest in Bitcoin, and that really has to do with anti-money laundering rules. The crypto nature of crypto makes it very difficult from an anti-money laundering perspective. So I think with gold, really what's creating that drag is not Bitcoin, but much rather the risk-on environment we're in.
Although I'm watching, like, when Mass Mutual buys, what, $100 million worth or something, you certainly pay attention. Let me just ask you for some price points for investors and traders who are thinking about exposure to commodities right now. You know, how much upside do you think we have for oil? How much upside for copper? You know, what kind of gains are we talking about?
Well, right now we're trading at $50 a barrel. Our target is $65 a barrel. We think that really begins to materialize sometime in the second half of next year when the vaccine takes hold. On copper, you know, we're trading right now around $7,700 a ton. Our target's $9,500 a ton. And really at the core is very robust Chinese demand growth. And our most recent property data suggests that this is not slowing down. The momentum's continued to take off. And I think your previous guest, you know, made alluded, got all the stimulus, 95 million millennials out there needing to buy homes and create households. It's going to create much more demand for copper as we look out. So these CapEx goods like copper, like iron ore, really have a lot more upside left to them.
It'll be interesting, and I expect we'll hear from companies as well squawking if those costs do go up the way you're projecting. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today.
Great. Thank you for
having
me.
Jeff Curry of Goldman Sachs. Coming up, don't give up on wipes. An even bigger call on Amazon and a video game battle royale. It's all coming up in rapid fire. Plus, why one firm is predicting the SPAC boom will continue. We're back in a couple. Welcome back to The Exchange. We're watching markets right now. The Dow traded above its closing high earlier when it was up 279 points at the highs, but it's given up nearly all of those gains. We're up 26 right now, 6 points higher for the S&P. The Nasdaq still hanging on to pretty decent gains. And as Seema Modi mentioned, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio did make some comments about potentially putting additional restrictions, including a return to full shutdown. These were comments on CNN, might have changed the tenor of the market today. The Nasdaq is now still up 106 points, and it's consumer discretionary and tech leading the way, so definitely a little bit of a pandemic feel to it, while energy and financials are the biggest laggards right now. Here are some of the individual movers this hour. Alexion Pharmaceuticals is sharply higher after agreeing to be bought by AstraZeneca in a $39 billion deal. The move helps AstraZeneca expand its presence in treatments for rare diseases. Alexion shares are up 30%. Astra, interestingly, is down 7%. But take a look at some of these other names that Jefferies' Jared Holt said could get some momentum as a result of this deal. They include value-based biotech names like BioMarin, Vertex, and United, which are all higher about 3 to 4 or 5% today. Elsewhere, shares of Virgin Galactic are down sharply after an aborted spaceflight test due to an engine ignition issue Saturday. The company said it will repeat the test, did not give a timeline. It's down 16%, under 27 right now. And shares of BJ's downgraded to neutral from overweight at JP Morgan on valuation concerns and skepticism about whether the company's post-COVID story has really changed. BJ's down a little less than 1%. Now to Sue Herrera for our CNBC News update. Hi, Sue.
Good to see you, Kelly. Hello, everybody. Here's what's happening at this hour. Electors in Arizona casting the state's 11 votes for Joe Biden, joining Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, and Wisconsin, where electors made it official after President Trump and his allies unsuccessfully tried to overturn Biden's popular vote victories. Turkish President Erdogan's 2019 purchase of a Russian air defense system has prompted the U.S. to impose sanctions today against its NATO ally. In India, unrest outside a factory that makes iPhones for Apple. A union representative says workers want unpaid wages and better hours. Apple says it is investigating if the Taiwan-based contractors have violated its supplier guidelines. And take a look at this. It looks pretty cold, and it is. It's a world record for the largest winter swimming relay in Estonia, where more than 500 people swam about 25 yards in a pool at 39 degrees water. Over 5 hours, they covered almost 8 miles. I'm not sure what that is on his head, so don't ask me, but I'm hoping it's his number, you know, or something like that. I don't know.
I was going to say, why do people do things like this? And then I remembered what kind of year it's been, and yes. I think I might have jumped in that pool with them.
Exactly. You're right. Look at that.
Flag, hat, and all. Sue,
oh,
thanks so much.
You got it, Kel.
We'll see you next hour. Sue Herrera. It's been a big year for blank check companies known as SPACs, with 206 deals so far in 2020. In fact, that accounts for more than half of the IPO capital raised this year. Goldman says this year's SPAC boom is more than just a fad, the firm writing in a note that increased retail activity has boosted interest in early stage SPAC offerings, and SPACs have low opportunity costs for investors while rates are low. Goldman also identified a key common factor in SPACs that have performed well, and you can read about it at cnbc.com/pro. Still ahead, the COVID vaccine rolling out across the country. We'll head to one of the largest pharma distributors in the country for the latest there. But first, Citi says Clorox will clean up. Cowen bets Amazon will deliver in 2021. And one high-profile video game's mega headache. It's on Rapid Fire right after this. Catch you up on a few stories that should be on your radar today. Welcome back. It's time for Rapid Fire. Here to break down the headlines are Morgan Brennan. Morgan,
yay!
Welcome back. I wish I could see you in person. Yay.
Oh, it's good
She's surviving.
You,
CNBC.com's Steve Kovac is with us as well. Deirdre Bosa also along for the ride, and it's great to have you guys all here. Let's start with Amazon, which is higher after Cowen named the juggernaut to its best idea list for next year. Amazon shares are up more than 70% this year as the pandemic led more people to skip the store and buy items online. But Cowen says there's plenty more room to run in the stock. In fact, it upped its price target to $43.50. That's a 40% move higher from here. Kovac, what do you make of it?
Oh, man, who's the biggest winner of the COVID pandemic besides Amazon? We've relied on them so much. They've proven that they can spend billions of dollars a quarter to work their way through this thing. One thing did stick out in that Cohen note to me was they were really highlighting the 50% increase in capacity in their warehouses. But our Amazon reporter, Annie Palmer, reported last week, sellers are actually having a problem with that increased capacity because they're still limiting inventory, what those sellers can put into the warehouses. So they're actually not selling as much as they actually could be selling, which, yes, that's a good reason to be bullish into next year about Amazon. But still, this holiday is not going to look as good as it even could have for what's going to be a knockout quarter for Amazon.
That was a great story. I'm glad that you mentioned it. I felt so bad. There's some of these, you know, people who are have a one-time opportunity, like board game makers because of the pandemic, and they literally can't, they're not allowed to send more product into these warehouses to meet this surge in demand. It's so, yeah, you're right. It could be a little bit of a governing effect for now. Deirdre, I mean, to me, it's sort of like, why not throw a 40% upside price target on Amazon? I mean, what's stopping them at this point?
What's stopping any of Wall Street? You never bet against Bezos is what you hear a lot of the time. I thought the header was interesting. What is underappreciated or misunderstood? That was one of the headers in the note. I think there is very little that is underappreciated about Amazon. But one thing that it does break out is Prime subscribers. The note says that Amazon is expected to have 175 million subscribers as of the end of this year. The pandemic has sped up how much we all rely on Amazon and other digital services. So again, it comes back to that flywheel, right? There's the e-commerce side, there's the video side, there's groceries, there's cloud, there's just so much that Amazon is doing. Even if it doesn't get it all right, it's experimenting. And that's what you see a lot of other companies trying to copy. On a day that we see Apple come out with its fitness app, right? It's trying to get its flywheel spinning, much like Amazon already has.
Mm-hmm. And I saw that Todd Hazelton, a big fan of it, says it's cheaper, and I think he might have even said better than the Peloton one. Anyway, Morgan, we'll give you the last word here.
Gross merchandise value, $1 trillion by 2026. That's what this note says. Let me just let that sink in. And Kelly, I think you can probably relate to this, but what happened over the past 4 months while I was out on maternity leave? Amazon is a $1.6 trillion market cap company. It literally added an entire Tesla to its market cap, and that's just one piece of the puzzle. I mean, advertising's a nascent business for Amazon still, and this note is calling for $26 billion in revenues on that very high margin business. That's just one business. AWS, I'll tell you, just on the defense side, with the shift to cloud among government contracting, it's seen as the gorilla in the room. All these different businesses that are all firing on so many cylinders right now.
No, it's a great point. It's essential. It really is. It's up another 2% today. All right, let's move along. Talk about the developers of Cyberpunk 2077. Stay with me, everybody, if you don't know this one. The game developers are apologizing and offering refunds after poor performance and technical issues caused a dismal debut for this highly anticipated video game. It was released less than a week ago, and it's been a rough go. Criticisms include bugs causing some to crash or freeze on older consoles. Users especially say gameplay is slow and the graphics are shoddy. The company says updates and fixes will roll out over the next few months. Speaking of which, on the video game front, EA just burned rival Take-Two by going over its head and outbidding it for gaming developer Codemasters. $1.2 billion deal, Take-Two and EA both rallying today. But Steve, I first heard about this video game from my brother, it's got Keanu Reeves, right? I mean, everyone was like waiting on it since the pandemic. We're all like, give us some new content. And they said, it doesn't work so well on the older consoles, and no one apparently can get their hands on a new one.
Yeah, if I can get personal a little bit, Kelly, it was a very disappointing weekend for me, too. I was looking forward to this game for 8 years since they first announced it. It's got everything I want. It's got Keanu Reeves. It's got cyberpunk, futuristic, dystopian, open world exploration and all that kind of stuff. Loaded it up on my PlayStation this weekend, and it crashed. And $65 in the hole now. I guess I can get a refund. But this was one of those AAA games that was supposed to just break the entire video game ecosystem this holiday. They delayed it a little bit to hammer out some of the bugs, but they clearly didn't do enough. And what's really happening here is that
So here's the thing. This video game developer I'm not that familiar with. Is it a publicly traded company? I mean, it could have been a real breakout
moment.
Yeah, their
stock's down 11% on this.
Now that it's not, there we go. And so now if you're the other game developers, you're kind of sitting pretty going, okay, well, there was supposed to be this, you know, new guy on the scene that, and never mind.
Yeah, exactly. And now people really need these new consoles in order to get the most out of it and not have these crashes and bugs. And good luck, you have a better chance of getting the COVID vaccine right now than you do getting a PlayStation 5. So it's going to be several months before this really gets ironed out.
Oof. I was going right, to say, Steve must not have been in line for one of those new consoles.
Yeah.
No,
there's all these stories about the black market and how you, like, no one can get their hands on one because of all these bots that are in there. Anyway, the demand is there, but the game did not live up to expectations, and we're sorry about your weekend, Steve. We really are. All right, let's talk about Clorox getting an upgrade to buy over at Citi today. The firm says that Clorox could have a hard time replicating the surge in demand for sanitizing products this year, but changing consumer behavior post-pandemic, including people continuing to disinfect more, and the company's well-balanced portfolio, well, those are reasons for bullishness long-term, they say. In this note, they're emphasizing, guys, that Clorox isn't just cleaning supplies. They do have a huge line of consumer products. They have Kingsford charcoal. They have Hidden Valley salad dressing and more. Morgan, are you buying it?
Potentially. I mean, they have Brita filters as well, right? I mean, but raise your hand if you still can't find Clorox wipes in the shelves in your local grocery store. I mean, I cannot.
True.
And I've got to think, even though I've seen some of the hygiene and some of the cleanliness at certain places I go to shop, slipping a little bit versus back in March and April, I've got to think that some of that, more broadly speaking, both inside the home but also outside of the home in some of these businesses, is just going to stay for good and become a much more standard protocol. Yes, the reflation trade has been, I think, sort of shifting some of the focus away from names like Clorox, which is why the stock has come off in recent weeks. But you got to think that there's still going to be this sustained demand that we've seen to at least some extent.
Deirdre, I'm on team that I think Clorox has pulled forward like 5 years of demand. I don't know. I don't know if Hidden Valley salad dressing is going to carry them through.
Does it need to? I mean, there's been such a shift in consumer habits. As Morgan was just outlining, does sort of our paranoia sort of last beyond the pandemic? Are people going to be cleaning their counters, every surface, long after we have a vaccine? I think that's a real possibility. I also think the new CEO is really interesting. One of the youngest executives at a Fortune 500 company, Linda Rendell. And I thought this is interesting. She's trying to get that production line in order so that they can actually boost their supply of it. And she is sort of scaling back on the more eco-friendly products, cleaners, in order to get the ones that people really care about now out the door, which to me seems sort of counterintuitive, but perhaps really smart if she can get supply to the level where it needs to be.
Yeah, I'm going to be, Clorox to me is like the battleground stock for 2021. Like, can it keep going or not? And finally, and we have very little time for this, so we'll turn to our Dub Smash expert, Steve Kovac. But the battle for Gen Z is heating up because Reddit has just bought this TikTok rival. If you don't know about Dub Smash, it lets users create videos of themselves with audio dubbed over from popular songs, movies, and TV shows. According to Reddit, about 25% of black teenagers use Dub Smash. About 70% of its users are female. Can it dethrone TikTok, Kovac, which just surpassed Facebook as the most downloaded app this year? So just as people are saying TikTok is king, is Dub Smash coming in?
Absolutely not. I view this as more as internet companies need to be onto the new platform and system that people are used to watching video content. You know, before we had a straight news feed, Snapchat introduced stories, which we saw integrated into every other rival social network. And now we have this TikTok format where you kind of scroll up and down through algorithmically generated videos that they shove at you. And I really see this as just as a way for Reddit to kind of build that into their system. I don't see Reddit really going after TikTok necessarily for this. It's just a new way within that Reddit community to follow that format without really having to build it themselves.
I don't even know why Reddit would have to when it's it seems like it's a message board. Like, what is the point? But that's not me. I'm certainly not the expert. I take your word for it. Guys, we'll leave it there with a big thank you to all Morgan Brennan, Steve Kovac, and Deirdre Bosa in Rapid Fire today. Still ahead, Pfizer's COVID vaccine is being distributed to hospitals across the country. Our Brian Sullivan is down in Shreveport, Louisiana, tracking the vaccine's arrival there. He joins us next. Welcome back to The Exchange. The COVID vaccine is rolling out across the country, and Morrison-Dixon in Louisiana is preparing to ship batches to hundreds of healthcare facilities in the state. Our Brian Sullivan is at their warehouse with more on that story. Brian?
Yeah, Kelly, I mean, listen, this is the day we've been waiting for. V-Day, right? Vaccine Day across America. We've talked so much about the science of this, the scientists, the work that's put in to develop the vaccine. But now it comes on the ground to a warehouse like this in Shreveport, Louisiana, where the men and women here have got to use their local knowledge, their local expertise to make sure the vaccine gets to where it's going. The vaccinations began this morning here in Shreveport, also in New Orleans. Kind of arriving this morning in some places without fanfare, by the way. Larry, the UPS guy, literally wheeling in the box. Good for Larry, by the way. Thank you, Larry, and everybody out at UPS and FedEx and everywhere else that's done all this distribution. So the hard part, though, is getting it from the main distribution centers to all the hospitals. Remember, Louisiana, a very unique state, and I say that in a very positive way, 64 parishes. There's 9 administrative regions of hospitals. 18 different organizations and agencies involved in the 137-page playbook to get this done. Okay, and I want to be clear, in case it wasn't last time, Kelly, this is not the vaccine, but this is how it comes. They have a mock-up so they can practice what they need to do. Believe it or not, look how small this is, Kelly. 2 milliliters, this is 5 doses, and it's only going to be about a quarter full. Now, here's the challenge, as we showed earlier. They're going to come like this into these big freezers, negative 80 degrees. Literally, you're going to have a team of people doing this as fast as they can. They have 3 minutes to get it done. Again, not the vaccine. They'll be wearing gloves. Don't worry. These are mock-ups to practice. Do it here. Put it in here. Get it on the trucks. Tomorrow, we're going to be on the road, by the way, following some of these trucks to these rural hospitals. So a few challenges, Kelly. You've got obviously the logistics of getting this done. Literally, it's a game, as I said earlier, a dance against temperature and time. But there's so many weird little issues that maybe you don't even think about. Look at the tape. The tape, okay? Guess what? You need tape to let people know this is not some cooler on the dock. This is critical life-saving vaccine. And by the way, Kelly, this tape comes from Bergen County, New Jersey, right around the corner from CNBC, to believe it or not. So the stuff we don't think about that's going to be saving lives across the rural South and all across the United States.
It's fascinating, and it's so good to know everything that goes into it, and only imagine what it's like trying to work quickly with those vaccines. Brian, thanks so much. Brian Sullivan is in Louisiana for us today.
Thank
you. Does it for The Exchange, but up next on Power Lunch, as the Pfizer vaccine rolls out, the FDA could give Moderna's vaccine emergency use approval later this week. We'll dig into the vaccine pipeline with a top analyst, tell us what to do with the stocks. I'll join Tyler Matheson after this quick break.
You've been listening to The Exchange. Make sure you're subscribed to get each episode every day, same time, same place.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.